Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
You're very welcome to the show tonight here on Radio Kerry. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is an expert photographer, Peter Cox. Peter's work has been featured in exhibitions from Ireland to Japan, as well as on television, and his work is hanging in thousands of homes around the world. Sit back and enjoy the show. Thanks a million for coming on today with me.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me.
What was your childhood like growing up, and were you into sports or...?
I wasn't, no. I was... So I grew up in Dublin, in Dunleary, and I was, I suppose I was a fairly nerdy kid. I'm a fairly nerdy adult, so it made sense I was a fairly nerdy kid. I was always interested in computers, really. I suppose from a very early age, I think I had a Commodore 64 was my first computer, and it was probably 1984, 1986, something like that. And that interest really kind of kept through my whole life. And my first career was in IT. I started working, you know, I went to university to do a science degree, but I never actually finished it. I found the socialization more enjoyable than anything else, and I kind of got lost in that. And I was lucky I kind of got away with skating through, because at that time, the stuff that was being taught in computer science wasn't necessarily as relevant as it might be today, because things were changing so fast. So I was able to get work straight out of dropping out of college, basically in IT, and I did that for, let's see, that would have been 1995-ish, and I was working in that for until 2005 when I started working photography. And in the interim, I lived in Chicago. I moved to the States and lived there for about 10 years, and then when we moved back from the States, I ended up changing careers at that point.
You went there in the mid-90s, was it, I was reading?
That's right, yeah. I suppose 96 is when I moved over there. And my wife is American. She's from Cleveland. And we decided to live in Chicago. We kind of took a bit of a gamble. We had a couple of months' worth of savings and a van load of secondhand furniture that we got from her friends and family. And we drove cross-country to Chicago, knowing pretty much nearly nobody and having nothing lined up, but she'd gone over a couple of months prior and had found an apartment for us. And so I think we had about 2 or 3 months of savings before we'd have nothing, but again, at the time, this was just the beginning of the dot-com boom in the mid to late 90s, and so we both managed to find work fairly quickly. But looking back on it now, I mean, our parents must have been worried sick, because we were basically taking a massive leap into the unknown.
Was when you were back in Ireland, were you saying you were obviously mad into computers and gadgets and stuff? Did you have any siblings growing up? Are you an only child?
No, I have two sisters and one brother. I'm the baby of the family, so as my father used to say, I'm the shakings of the sack, because I was 9 years younger than my brother, who's the next youngest.
And were they kind of the same as you? Did you have kind of similar taste, and were they more sports, or were they into the same kind of stuff?
So I suppose my sister Kira, she's the one who would be the most sporty. She actually, because the other thing is that they were my sister and my brother were much closer in age, so I was very much the baby. You know, my brother was a teenager when I was, you know, late teenager when I was 10, do you know what I mean? So we weren't really peers in that sense. But Kira ended up going over to California on a hockey scholarship, field hockey.
Really?
She stayed there. She's still living there to this date. And my other sister is a professor of geology, also living in the States. She lives in Massachusetts. And then my brother got into business. Again, he's still doing that. He still lives in Ireland. So we're all kind of quite different people, I suppose. And we all took different paths, but we all get along very well together. It's been a fantastically supportive family to have.
Do you get over and back to the States now with your wife, or would you kind of mainly stay in Ireland?
I suppose since we moved back here, we've tended to stay here. We have visited over, visited my sister's and Anne's family, of course, as well. But in recent years, even since before COVID, really, we've been traveling much less. And you know, I do a lot of travel. I used to do. I've kind of stopped the workshops now, but I used to do an awful lot of traveling for the photography workshops that I would do. And so there wasn't much left in the tank, if you like, to do other traveling on top of that.
Yeah, you kind of done all your traveling with work wise. Moving on to the kind of photography and that kind of, that industry. I was reading in 2000 you bought your first digital camera, and is it then you kind of took an active interest in it? And how did it come around? Did you just decide to get a camera, or how did it work?
So when I was, it's interesting because, yeah, so my first digital camera was around 2000, but that was kind of coming back to it as a, I had a casual interest as a kid, probably around, you know, from the time I was around 10, and nothing serious, but I remember actually even younger than that, I got a gift for a birthday, and it was, I remembered it was a Starsky and Hutch, that's before your time now, but it was like a very popular sort of police.
I wasn't even part of them, so.
Yes, exactly, at the time. But it was a set. It was like a, you know, a toy set. It had like handcuffs and a toy gun and a badge and stuff. And there was a camera, like this little plastic yoke. And I don't think they even realized that it was a working camera, but it actually came with a roll of film and a very, very basic camera. And I just sort of took some photographs of people on the street outside the house. And that's the first photographs that I ever took, and I actually still have some of them, strangely enough. And then, you know, my father would have a camera, and for family occasions and picnics and so on, I would photograph. And I remember people sort of saying, and I enjoyed it, and I also, people would say, oh, you take nice photographs. But then I didn't do anything with it for a very long time, and it wasn't really a serious interest. But then, of course, when digital cameras start to come around, my love of gadgetry and technology sort of, you know, reconnected with that interest in photography. And I spent, I can't remember how much it was quite expensive at the time, but it was like a 3-megapixel Sony, you know, sort of point and shoot digital camera. But I was kind of hooked on it. The idea of, you know, being able to make photographs and you could see them on a computer screen was massively new, and it tickled all the right technological buttons for me. And I just kind of gradually from that point got more and more interested in it, and I upgraded the camera a couple of times to different ones until I got my first digital SLR, which would have been Canon Digital Rebel at the time. It was the very first digital SLR, one of the very first ones. And then, but what I was finding was that the, you know, so I, what I've discovered through teaching photography for many years is that, you know, and with same with any skill, there are people that have a predilection for a thing, right? You have a certain native ability, and that takes you so far. And then you, if you want to improve, you have to learn what's going on. And I was kind of lazy about it for a long time. I was saying, I don't need to learn about composition and all that stuff. You know, I can take grand pictures, but that's a massive skill that you need to learn in order to progress. And I finally was convinced that I needed to do better, and so I started putting an effort in to learn, to actively learn how to get better rather than just mess around. And I suppose that's when things kind of really took off. So at the time, you know, I was living in Chicago, and there's not much in terms of landscape around in that area. It's a huge city, and it's a beautiful city, and there's lots of architecture there, so I dabbled in that. But it's in a very, very flat area. There's lots of cornfields around. There's no real landscape. And so I was a little bit limited by that. But it wasn't too long after I got seriously interested. So let's say 2000 is when I got the first camera. Probably around 2003 is when I started to get really, really into it and starting to develop. And then in 2005, we actually moved back to Ireland. And so that then opened up the landscape opportunities for me.
That reminds me of something like I do. You get something from IKEA and you say, I don't need the instructions, and you kind of do it, and then when you realize you can read them, it helps you.
That's exactly it.
I was watching an interview you done with another, I think he was a photographer on YouTube. We were doing it during COVID, and you were saying that your mom kind of inspired you, that she was saying you can do that.
That's right, yeah. So when we moved back to Ireland in 2005, we actually lived with my parents for about a year and a half as a way to kind of save money. And my mother, fairly soon after we moved back, she got dementia, and she kind of gradually just kind of got worse and worse. But she had these moments of lucidity, and I was working in kind of my office in that house one day, and I was working on some photographs, and she came in, and she was sort of, you know, she was fairly lucid at the time. And she was curious about what I was doing. And so I explained that I was working on some photographs. And she says, oh, you're really into that, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I think I might. And I at the time, I was just starting to think about trying to make a career out of it. Because when we moved back from Chicago, I'd been getting very fed up with the IT side of things. I was really not enjoying that career anymore. And it was becoming a real drag. And I was looking for work in that area in Ireland. But we had a bit of money, our costs were very low, so there wasn't a lot of pressure to find work, and I was just not very enthusiastic about my looking. But I knew I needed to get a job, but I just, you know, I wasn't, there was no heart in it. I was doing sort of solo IT consulting for small businesses, and that was also bringing in some money. But I wasn't keen on it, and I was thinking, Jesus, you know, maybe I might be able to make something work as a photographer. But I didn't really believe it. I didn't really think that this was something that I would be, that I could do, that I could allow myself to do. It didn't seem realistic. And anyway, Mom was sort of talking to me about it, and she said, oh, you're really interested in that. And I said, yeah. And I said, I think I might try to make something of this as a full-time gig. And she says, we'll do that for you. We'll see that you do that. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a real offer of help, because she wasn't able to, but it was the idea that she gave me permission, if you like, to imagine that this was something that I could do.
Yeah.
And that flipped a switch where I was then saying, you know, actually, yeah, I think I can do this. Let me give this a try. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And so that was the turning point that kind of put me onto the path that I'm on now.
It's actually a beautiful thing to look back on and be able to, I suppose, say that she was able to say that to you, when you can look back now on what you've done all through your career.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to the show. I'm here today with photographer Peter Cox. Peter has a very interesting story, how he got into photography, from there going on to opening his own gallery, and he's been all over the world shooting pictures. He's been to Antarctica, Greenland, you name it, he's been there. He's been up close and personal with polar bears and penguins and everything, so a very interesting story, so I hope you're all enjoying the show so far.
You were saying you were doing a few bits for like small business and stuff. Were you doing kind of, I suppose, weddings and parties and stuff, and then you realized that landscaping was for you? Were you doing that kind of side of things first?
So no, the things I was doing for the small businesses was IT related. It was you know, it was just sort of managing computers for them and so on. And but because it was part-time, and you know, it was very, very casual. Yeah, it was sort of was the gig economy, if before the gig economy, do you know what I mean? But I had plenty of time to put into photography. So the way that I developed it was I did try the wedding side of it, because that was a thing that it seemed to be the obvious path to make money in photography. And so I did a couple of weddings for friends, kind of for free, just to get a feel for how it would work. And I think I did two weddings for pay in my entire career. And I just realized this is not something that I enjoy. I don't enjoy that side of the business. And so I very consciously said, I'm not going to go down that road, because I'm just leaving a career that I grew to hate, and I don't want to take this passion that I have and smother it in something that I don't enjoy and ruin it. So I decided that I would follow the thing that attracted me to photography in the first place, which was always landscapes. And so the way that I approached that then was I started to do craft fairs and markets in Dublin at first. And there were a couple that I did there. There was one in the Docklands. I think that might have been my first one, Christmas market. And that did okay. You know, I think I made a small profit on it. But it was nice to see the reaction that people had. And then I started doing the, there was an art fair that's, I think, still going on at the RDS every year. And then the Christmas craft market there. So I would do those, and those would bring in, between that and the IT consulting, that actually brought in enough to have to make a bit of a living on. And then, so after a couple of years of doing that, we actually moved down to Ballingeary, where we are now. My wife got a job doing...
Around 2007, Peter, was it?
That's right, exactly, yeah. So in 2007, we moved down here. My wife got a job here doing technical writing, which is her career. And she was keen to get out of Dublin. So we came down here, and I knew nothing about the place. I'd never heard of Ballingeary or been here before. But we came, and we really were taken by it. And, you know, it's a beautiful... beautiful area. It's a lovely village, some nice people. So Anne took the job, and we stayed here. And so once we were here, I dropped the IT stuff entirely, and still worked on you know, I'd go up to Dublin to do these markets every now and then, and I also started offering workshops. I would do one-to-one workshops.
What did they involve? Was it just talking about with beginners about landscaping, or how did they work?
Pretty much that, yeah. So usually very much beginners, people that really, you know, needed to be taught everything about the camera, and the theory of photography, and, you know, how aperture and shutter speed works and all that kind of thing. So the technical side of it, and then also more importantly, the compositional side of it, because that's a skill that can be taught. A lot of people think that you either have an eye or you don't, but it is a skill that can be taught, because there are kind of rules that can be followed that if you pay attention to them, you get much better results than otherwise. And so, yeah, there would be 2-day things. People would come down, we'd put them up in local B&Bs, and we'd cook dinner for them on the first night, and then we'd have a kind of a half day the second day. And so there'd be a combination of working out in the landscape, taking photographs, and then coming back, and they would we'd work on the photographs then and edit them.
And I was reading on your website since then, you've led workshops all over the world in the likes of Iceland, Scotland, Greenland, and the Antarctica. What was that like, I suppose, branching out from just doing them down in Cork, where you were doing it, to all over the world? You obviously got to see some amazing places.
Yeah, I've been incredibly privileged to be able to travel as much as I have, and to the places that I have. And it's one of the great things about photography, is that it opens all sorts of doors, whether it's traveling to places like you mentioned, or getting access to places like, you know, the access that I've had to the lighthouses around Ireland, for example, is because I'm a photographer, and because and that has been fantastic. But in terms of the international travel, yeah, it was a bit of a... because the way those work, you know, you need 10 or so people, and you're taking them for 10 days to a place, and you need to have a certain number of bookings. It was kind of scary to go from, you know, just on the fly, you know, somebody would say, listen, I would like to come down for a weekend to learn photography, and I didn't need to schedule anything. You know, just they come, and then I make the arrangements when they booked. But then if you want to say, I'm going to Iceland on August the 15th this year, you need to then have 10 people sign up in order to make that work. Right, yeah. And that's a much harder thing to do. So that was kind of frightening to do, but I enjoyed traveling. I had been to Iceland on a workshop in, I think, 2006, and I met a guy there called Daniel Bergman, who's a landscape photographer there, and we became friends. And I really enjoyed the process of being on the workshop, and I thought, this is something I could do. And so I started organizing them. And yeah, it worked really well. And as you say, I mean, I've been to Iceland, I don't know, I can't even remember how many times, probably 15 plus times. That's where I did most of the international ones. And then Daniel and I and another photographer, an American photographer, co-chartered a ship in 2013 to run a trip in Svalbard, which is in the Norwegian Arctic. And so,
really?
Yeah, that was pretty... That was scary because, you know, when you get into that level, it's not just a case of hotels you've booked. It's also you've got a ship you have to pay for. And, you know, when you charter a ship, you sign a contract. And if you can't fill it, then that's your tough and you've got to pay whatever shortfall there is. So thankfully, in all the ship-based trips that I've done, we've never been in that position, but it's always been a bit scary.
Is there any, I suppose, country out of them few that we mentioned that stood out to you? Like, because when that kind of stuff comes to your head, them countries, like when I was doing a bit of research on you, I automatically thought of like polar bears and penguins. Have you come across the likes of them in some of the countries?
Yes, absolutely. So the Svalbard trips are all about polar bears, actually. Well, I mean, their landscape, it's a beautiful, beautiful landscape, and most people go there and want to go there because it's a good place to see polar bears. And
what are they like in person? Are they as big as movies you'd see?
Oh, they are, yeah. It's polar bears are incredible animals because they're actually classified as marine mammals the same way whales are, because they spend their lives on the ocean. They're on the ice, they're not swimming all the time, and they try to avoid swimming even though they're very good swimmers. But they actually are a creature of the ocean, and you can get quite close to them. Now things are changing. Obviously the climate change is affecting their habitat, and it's getting hard. And also because Arctic tourism has become more popular, it's become more of a problem where people are bothering bears. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in Svalbard, for example, as of I think this year, it's they're changing the rules and you can't get anywhere close to polar bears anymore. But up until recently, you would always, because the thing is, they're dangerous, right? That they are very dangerous.
Unpredictable, are they?
They're not necessarily unpredictable, but the problem with them is, so first of all, any encounter with a bear and a human, the bear always loses. Even if a human is injured or killed, the bear is also killed, right? That's the law. And so you're required to carry a rifle when you're in polar bear territory for self-defense. But the very last thing you want to do is to have to shoot a bear, because they're an endangered species. The major risk comes from just being careless and, for example, not properly scouting a place. If you're going to make a landing where you're going to be maybe doing some photography, you need to make sure that you scout the area from the ship with your binoculars. And then also you make if there's a rock, because the worst thing that can happen is you can walk around a boulder and there's a bear sleeping there and you wake it up and then the bear attacks you because it's, of course, threatened. So you have to properly scout and make wide skirts around boulders and things like that to make sure there's nothing hiding behind them. But if you do it all by the book and you take proper care, then it's a very safe thing to do. We've done several trips like that, and the encounters you can have, we can have very close encounters with bears where the bear might be on shore, but you're in a Zodiac, like a rubber, boat. Just offshore, and you have the mobility to be able to get away from it if it decides to take an interest in you, and you can get quite close and really have a good encounter with the bear in a very safe way.
Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, as always, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with expert photographer Peter Cox. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show, or you'll be able to get this interview, as well as all the shows I've done so far, on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. Have you been on any, I suppose, safaris and stuff, say in South Africa, seeing like tigers and lions and giraffes and stuff?
No, I tend to go cold places. I'm not much for the heat, so I've never been to Africa and that kind of thing. So the only wildlife, I do have wildlife photography with bears and penguins and the Antarctic and things like that, but it's only kind of incidental, right? And my main interest is going to these places for the landscapes.
Landscaping.
And when the bear where there's wildlife, I'll obviously take advantage of it and I'll photograph it, but it's not something I really seek out. And again, I prefer to put more layers on than find yourself down to a t-shirt and shorts and you're still broiling.
If there was one of them countries that you could go back to every time, because my friend, he was actually in it was Greenland, I think, and he said it was unbelievable there, like everywhere you look it kind of blows you away. Is there any country there that you go back to more than the others?
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, Greenland actually is a place that would be top of my list. I mean, I've been to the Antarctic, I've been to the Arctic, I've been to Greenland, and Greenland is the place that I would choose to go back to over Antarctica any day of the week, because it's beautiful, it's dramatic. The place where I've always gone in Greenland is a place called Scoresby Sund, which is a fjord system. It's the largest fjord system in the world. At the mouth of the fjord, it's a huge, it extends in for hundreds of kilometers, and at the mouth of it, it's actually as wide as the English Channel. So that gives you an idea of how big it is. And there's virtually nobody living there. The only people that live there's a community of Inuit hunters, that there's about 300 or 400 of them that live in a small village, and they hunt in the area. And it's funny because one of the really amazing things about it is well, the reason you go there is for the landscape and for the ice and for the icebergs, but there's also incredible mountains, really beautiful, very, very tall, jagged mountains. But the icebergs in particular are amazing. And there's a place in Scoresby Sund where there's a huge glacier at the end of this really long fjord, and it calves off all these icebergs, and they float down the fjord into this kind of central area, and the depth of that fjord is about 2 kilometers or so. So it's about 2,000 meters deep. And these icebergs are huge. They're of course, as you know about icebergs, 9/10 of them are below the surface, right? Yeah. And so they're huge, huge icebergs that might be 200 meters tall. And so you know that there's an awful lot more below. And there's an area they come to where it shallows in inverted commas, because it shallows to like 500 or 600 meters deep. So it's still incredibly deep, but it's shallow enough that these big icebergs actually ground there. And so they collect in this area. And the first time I went there, it was actually on a scouting trip, for a trip I was going to do the following year with a guy who had a small wooden 44-foot sailing boat. And we were going to do this trip. It was going to be myself, himself, and one other crew. And then we'd have 4 guests on the trip, so 4 paying customers. And that was the maximum we could take.
Yeah.
So a really, really small trip. And we were scouting for that. And so we just went over and we hired a couple of the locals to take us into the fjords on these little 5-meter fiberglass powerboats. And so we went 200 kilometers from Itikatormit, which is the village where they live, into the wilderness. And there's nobody, no other settlements anywhere around. And as we're going in, we're chatting with the Inuit guys, and they're sort of saying, what are you doing here? What are you coming here for? And we explained what we were doing, and we were going to bring some photographers over. And they said, well, why do they want to come here? And I said, well, I mean, one of the things would be the icebergs. As we're, powering through these incredible tall cathedral-like icebergs that are all over the place in this beautiful calm water, and the guys look at me like I got two heads. Like, why would you want to come over here and photograph icebergs? That's it. And it struck me, it was like he was like a Kerry farmer sort of saying to an American tourist, saying, why do you want to come here and photograph sheep? And it was very much the same thing, but it's just like, it's like, this is what he's used to. He sees it every day. He sees nothing unusual about it. But for us, it's like this magical, amazing place.
Kind of like Killarney, like people come over and I'm so used to it and stuff. In 2011, you opened your gallery in Killarney, and almost 10, I suppose, in 2013, I was reading, you kind of expanded into a bigger place and you have a team now. Was opening a gallery always the goal, I suppose, from when you started?
I suppose every photographer would dream about having their own gallery. That's the thing that I think would be fairly universal. And I didn't think it was something that would be really viable. And I you know, I was kind of languishing a bit with my photography, and I was, because it's very hard to sell prints online, especially back then, because, you know, people, they're expensive, and people, you know, need a bit of a reassurance that they're getting something actually of quality when they spend that much money. And it's also difficult for people to visualize what something looks like when they see it on a website, if they just see it, you know, an image, right, and they don't see it in context in a frame on a wall. And so it was getting harder to sell prints, and I was only really selling prints at these fairs, which I was only doing two or three times a year. So it felt it was getting harder. And one of my contemporaries, one of the guys that I met, you know, doing these art fairs, he put out a book, actually. And it was the first of us. He was the first of us to kind of put out a book. And I thought, geez, you know, I've got to do something. And I said, Killarney seemed, there's no photography gallery in Killarney. It seems like that would be a really good place to put one. And Killarney is only 45 minutes from where I live. And I said, you know, maybe I'll start thinking about it. So I went in and I started looking at places that were available. And at first I was playing it very safe, and I was looking for something that would be really small and affordable, and if I made no money with it, that it wouldn't wipe me out. And I remember there was a place on New Street, down near past where Chapter 40 used to be there, kind of near the very end of New Street. And it was this tiny little shop front, and it was going for, I can't even remember, but it was $400 a month or something like that, or maybe a bit more than that, but it was, anyway, it was very cheap. And I thought, right, I'll give that a go. And then the more I thought about it, I said, geez, there's no footfall here. You know, this is probably going to fail if I open this here, no matter what I do. It's just not going to, it's too small and there's not enough traffic. So I decided to take a risk, and a neighbor of mine knew Padraig Quill, of course, because the Quills are from Ballingeary. And so he introduced me to Padraig, and Padraig had a unit right next to, you know, in the middle of Quills Row there by Market Cross. And it was this narrow little unit that they were using as a gift shop that hadn't been doing very well for them, I suppose. And they put it up. It wasn't officially listed for rent, but, you know, he sort of said, look, I'd rent it to you if you were interested.
Yeah.
And so I rented that, but that was, I think it was 2,000 euros a month for that at the time. And that was scary, right, to have that much.
Fancy enough worried, isn't it?
Overhead, you know. And and then I knew I need staff. And the idea of paying somebody, I'll be responsible for somebody else's livelihood and their wages. And to know that no matter what happened every month, that I had to be able to pay my staff. Was really, really intimidating. So this is 2011, as you said, and it was, you know, we're still kind of in the grips of the recession. And so many people said, geez, you're very brave to be opening a business at this time. And I felt like it would work. And thankfully it did. You know, I opened May 2011. And the scariest thing about it is that you know exactly what pretty well what the outgoings are. There's always a few that surprise you. But you've no idea what you're going to get for the incomings. Like, you've no clue. And that was terrifying. I managed
to
speak...
Kind of a leap into faith, like we were talking about at the start, isn't it?
It really was, yeah. And it was, you know, I had managed to speak to another photographer who had a gallery. And, you know, he gave me some numbers that he had experienced in his life. And that gave me some bit of hope, but it was a completely different market, different town. But anyway, I took the plunge, and thankfully it worked. You know, I had some support from family that helped me to, because there was a cost to fit the place out. And so I had support from my sister for that, which really, really helped. And yeah, it kind of worked quite well. But it was still a very small unit. It was quite narrow. But it was working okay. It was making money. And then the next door unit, which was also owned by Quills, that became kind of available. They had Ladies Fashions in there, I think, at the time, and they were moving that to something else. And so I talked to Padraig, and he agreed to let it to me. And so that was much bigger unit. And actually, I saw, you know, a big increase in footfall as a result, because it just was much more visible. But again, it was scary because it was more expensive again. But at that stage, I knew that it was working. I kind of knew what I was able to bring in, and I knew, okay, a bigger unit, I should be able to bring in more money. And so that worked. So that's kind of... So I was in there for 5 years, just about, and then they wanted to take it back to turn it into the current unit that it is, which is a menswear shop. And so I ended up moving over to Plunkett Street to where I am now.
Now we're going to go for our last ad break. Stay tuned in to Radio Kerry, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, the last part of the show. Tell me about the retrospective portfolio from, was it kind of from 2011, 2021, that you, there was only, what was it, or you were saying there was only 100 out of them made or something, was it?
Yeah, I think 150. That was a bit of an experiment just to see how that would work, because most of what I sell in the gallery are prints, individual prints, and books, of course. The idea of having a little box that would have kind of a presentation box that would have individual photographs in it, and it seemed like a nice idea. I know other photographers that have done it, and it was a nice thing to do, to recognize that, you know, the 10 years since opening the gallery, which of course was a major turning point in the business, and so that's worked quite well. I mean, I think there's still a few left, but it's been quite popular, and it's a little box and nicely presented box, and you get each individual print is of course hand signed and titled, like all my prints are, but there's a little sheet in there that has some information and stories about all how those photographs were made, because people are interested in that and the stories behind the photographs, and then, you know, a little pair of white gloves to make it feel very posh, and which is also, I mean, because the thing is, you don't tend to handle the prints, and the prints are lovely things to handle, but of course they do get fingerprints on them. So the white gloves are, they're not just an affectation, they are there as a way to let people handle the thing without muddying them up, but you don't use, because they are, you know, it's a lovely heavy paper and it's got a nice texture to it, and that's that tactileness that you don't get when you just look at it up on the wall.
It's the last thing you want is to ruin it. You've obviously loads of unbelievable shots that have been, like the Skelligs and all that. Why is Ireland such a, I suppose, a beautiful place for landscaping? And do you think it's as popular for photographers around the world coming here as it is for the likes of you and others going to, say, Antarctica?
I mean, Ireland is beautiful because, well, it's beautiful. I mean, there's no question about it. It's, you know, we have this amazing coastline, and it's the coast that is the thing that makes me the most excited. But of course, we've got beautiful mountains and we've got beautiful landscapes. And the thing is, we also then have all that lovely stuff, like you can have pastoral stuff where you've got these beautiful stone walls and, you know, dotted with sheep. But then you've got cliffs right next to them and islands offshore. And it's hugely varied as well. Like the lovely thing is, as you travel up the West Coast and you go from Cork up through Kerry and Clare and Limerick and Mayo and Galway and Donegal and Sligo, it changes all the way. Every county and every piece of every county has its own character. Like Iver is so much different than Dingle, for example, you know, and is different again from Beara. And Connemara is vastly different from Donegal, so you have all this variety, and that's, I think, what draws me. And then, of course, the weather. You know, you have such a massive range of weather, and for me, you know, when it's inclement and when the weather is a bit rough, it's when it's at its best. You know, and you have really interesting skies and fascinating clouds, and then you've got the wind whipping up the water and big waves. It really, really sings. It's interesting in that it's, you know, I've made a business out of bringing people over here, you know, because I didn't just, of course, take people to exotic places. I also did one or two workshops a year in Ireland, and it worked fairly well. But it's not like Iceland, or, you know, because Iceland is an extreme example. Like, that's just a place where photographers have flooded there, and you know, it's very, very hard to get an original photograph from Iceland these days, because all the popular places have been photographed so much, it's become kind of a cliche. And Ireland never really got to that point, and I wonder if it ever will now, because that real I think, kind of bubble, if you like, of photography travel is, there's still a lot of it there, but it's not as much as it was, and it's growing at a much slower rate than it was. And I'm kind of glad that we didn't really get that way, because we would have been completely overexposed, I think.
Yeah.
And also it would have made, because there are popular places in Iceland, you go there for a sunrise, there could be 80 or 90 other landscape photographers all in that same spot, all trying to get the same photographs. And it just doesn't make for a good experience. Whereas here, there's so many places you can go and you see nobody.
And it's good to keep it unique. Every single photographer doesn't have the same shot. Peter, thanks so much for coming on today. Now, and I really enjoyed that chat, and I appreciate your time.
Not a bother, Ian. Really appreciate you having me, and thanks very much.
Now, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. A massive thanks to Peter for coming in today and having a chat with me about his own life and career in photography, because it's a very interesting industry, and one that, I suppose, including myself, that wasn't aware of what goes on behind the scenes and the travelling and everything involved. So a massive thanks to him for coming in to share his story, and I hope you all enjoyed it. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email address on my email, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. I hope you're all having a great week. I'll be back at the same time next week from 8 to 9pm. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself. Oh, and all the best to Kerry playing this weekend. Up the kingdom.